Good evening, everybody. Hope all is well. I want to just dedicate this year, L'iloi Nishmas, Rabbi Harvey Center, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, as this parsha is parsha Shmini. Always after Pesach, the first parsha is Shmini, or almost always. And a central mitzvah found in parsha Shmini is the mitzvah of Kashrus. So we're going to learn in the parsha this week about all of Kashrus, kosher animals, kosher fish, kosher birds, etc. And this evening, Shia will be related to Kashrus. And it's certainly appropriate that the Ribbono Shel Olam took the neshama of Rabbi Center out of this world in the week before Parsha Shmini, all discussing Kashrus, because Rabbi Center, Zatzal, is the founder of the Chaf Keh. I don't know if how many of you had exposure to him in your lifetime. Anyone ever have exposure to Rabbi Center? You know, is a big figure in the community, at least the Bergen County community, towards the end of his life, at least. Did anyone ever overlap with him? Who? His nephew? Yeah, who's that?
Yudi Rosenbaum.
Oh, Yudi lived in Fairlawn for many years, really? Yeah. I didn't know that. So, Rabbi Center, I daven mincha by him on Fridays, and the Chaf Keh office is a mincha, an early mincha, mincha gedola on Fridays, and I have a big thing for mincha gedola on Fridays, so I often daven mincha with him. So, you know, we schmooze every now and then, me and him. And it was clear that he was like the patriarch of the family. You know, he's working there with his two sons, etc., and the whole family. Everyone looked up to him as such a gadol. And he really is a hero. And I don't know too much about him. And certainly in the month of Nisan, we shouldn't say, I guess, too much. Right? I guess for a chacham, there's an exception to eulogize. But I don't know him, frankly. I just, you know, it's appropriate. All I'm going to say is that it's, you know, I guess dedicated in his name. And it's appropriate that we're learning about Kashrus in the same week of his funeral. And we know that, again, the Parsha is going to be dealing with the sugya of Kashrus. So let's begin with Psukim in the Parsha, and we'll speak about a little bit of a controversial topic in very contemporary times with modern-day Kashrus issues. And we'll get there in a little bit. So in the Parsha, Hashem tells Moshe, V'daber Hashem al Moshe v'el Aaron le'mor le'em, Debru ben Yisrael le'mor, Zosachaya, this is the animal, Asher tochlu mikola behema, so which animals can you eat? We know only the ones that chew their cud and have split hooves, right? Called mafresis parsa, v'hirsashasa, parsuprasos, malas, gera, bebehema, ata, tochelo. All right, so we know the famous simanim, any animal who chews its cud and also has split hooves, right? But if everyone only has one of the two simanim, that is insufficient. And the Rambam brings this down as one of the 613 mitzvahs, asay, kuf, mem, tes, 149 is, there's a biblical commandment to check animals to make sure they are properly, that they have both of these simanim. So if one were to want to eat an animal, you'd have to shecht it and ascertain whether or not it really chews its cud or has split hooves, i.e. nowadays, I guess we have a pretty, you know, clear list about which animals are on the list and which were not are on the list. That being said, it is a mitzvah to ascertain whether or not your food is kosher. You have to make sure your animal has split hooves and chews its cud. And in the Parsha, it's not limited to animals. The Parsha goes on to speak about birds. The Parsha speaks about bugs. This Parsha speaks about fish. And when it comes to kashrus, we have a very, very big problem. We'll start with the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and then we'll branch out to a discussion before we see anything else. Says the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Ein lochim, this is an acronym for certain foods that stand, you know, yayin, muryas, chalav, whatever. Don't buy certain foods in Syria. So Robert Isler, if he's going on vacation to Syria and he wanted to buy some milk or some salt, he would not be able to purchase it in Syria. Why not? Why not? You know why? It says like this. You could only buy it from a mumcha, from an expert, from an expert. I.e., we're afraid of kashrus concerns. The people in Syria had some kashrus issues. So if you were to go into the average store, restaurant, the local bodega, whatever, a deli store, to buy some food, again, on this list, there's wine and milk and salt and cheese and some other foods, you would not be able to. Meaning we're talking about, obviously, the times before of standard kashrus and symbols and things like that. And if we were to ask the guy behind the counter, he would not be believed. So even if the man in Syria were to tell you, oh, yeah, my cheese in my store is kosher, you would not be able to believe him unless he is in the category of mumche, if he's an expert. However, if you were to go to the individual's home, says the Gemara Avodah Zohar, v'chulan imnis areach etza balabayis, but if Robert were to go to that store owner's home for supper, mutter, then he would be able to eat supper by that individual if he tells you it's kosher. Because the opinion of Rabbi Shua ben Levi essentially is that people might keep kosher in their home, but they might not sell kosher food. Whoa. So people might keep a kosher home, but they might not keep kosher food. Whoa. So what this Gemara ends up being is the springboard for a tremendous controversy about who we are allowed to believe and rely upon when it comes to kashrus certification. The Gemara just told us that there are certain people who are not allowed to believe. And yet the Gemara then went around and said, but those same people would be believed in a different context, i.e. the way that might act in business is a little bit less reliable than the way they might act in their own home. And you could understand the opposite to be true as well. Someone might be a little bit more reliable in business, doesn't want to lose his job. He has to be honest when he's at work. But when he's home, he might be a little bit more, we'll say, off the beaten path, and he might violate some of the dinim. And the question that the Rishonim are going to grapple with on the Gemara is, well, who does the Torah allow us to believe? And who does the Torah not allow us to believe? And I'll preface with the following anecdote. When I was in Yeshiva University, as a smicha student, I learned Yoredeya. Yoredeya is where you learn about the laws of the kitchen and kashrus, etc. And it just so happened in that summer, around this time of year, June or so, maybe a little later, maybe it was May, the OU was offering a kashrus course. And I said, perfect. What a perfect supplement for my Yoredeya learning to actually have certification to become an OU mashkiach. And there was a week of intensive training, or I'll say a crash course, on what mashkichim do. We even went to a factory in New Jersey where they make like mayonnaise or something. And we did that. I actually went with my friend to La Marais. We audited their mashkiach. La Marais, a famous steakhouse in Manhattan, is under the OU. And that is very kosher, by the way, should be noted. And it was an eye-opening experience. The issue with that program is that they scare the pants off of you by telling you about every scandal that has taken place in the past 20 years, about people who have pretended to sell kosher cheese, but it's really not kosher, people who have pretended that the chicken in the Chinese restaurant is kosher, but it's really treif chicken, and they scared me. It's like they tell you how to look for people who are trying to lie and steal. And that's their job, is to outsmart people who are crooked and to prevent those issues. And it kind of makes you think a little bit more aggressively and a little bit more defensively. And when we went to La Marais to audit their mashkiach, like, we found little problems that we reported back to the OU. It wasn't like perfect, but the problems were not at all anything to, you know, detract from the kashrus of that restaurant. And it was a fascinating experience, but it basically opened up an entire world for me. Whereas before that course, I would have said, what do you mean? If it has an OU on it, if it's a kosher restaurant, it's kosher. And after that week, I was like, it would be a miracle if any food is ever kosher. It really changed the whole way I think about industrial kosher. Hey, what's up?
Rabbi, it says meyutan begezel. Unfortunately, it's a very big temptation. And yes. Even mashkichim, unfortunately, have not always been able to withstand the temptation.
Right. So we know that story, or at least that concept. So let's now go into the classical Rishonim and Halacha, and we'll try to walk away with some formula about how to go about living life. But ultimately, we have only wonderful things to say about the RCBC, about the OU, and certainly, again, Leiloi Nishmas, Rabbi Center Zatzal, who was just Nifter, you know, the Chaf K, the OU, the OK, the Star K, the CRC. What an amazing group of organizations that we are zocha to live with. And especially coming off of Pesach, the amount of Torah, or let's say help, I was able to help members of our own community based on the OU's Pesach guide, as well as the Star K's Pesach booklet. You know, it's phenomenal what we have and how we have benefited from our kashrus organizations, you know, in America. So we only have good things to say about our kashrus organizations, Baruch Hashem. That being said, let's learn some Rambam and some Ritva. So the Gemara said that if you go to Syria, you got to watch out. Says the Ritva, this Gemara should not scare you. In fact, the Gemara is a very limited Isser. You know why? And look how the Ritva writes, HaPerish HaNachon, the correct explanation of this Gemara, i.e., there's an incorrect way to learn the Gemara also that other people learn, is that the Gemara picked Syria, Levi Shehayu Chashudin, because the people in Syria had a unique issue of being suspicious. There was reason to suspect the merchants of Syria in particular that they would sell Dvarim Elu Shel Goyim Bechezkas Shehein Shel Yisrael. They would dishonestly sell non-kosher food, claiming that it was kosher. And they were not worried about Lo Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol. So they would sell an average Jew kosher food, and they were not concerned about the fact that they were leading Jews astray to help them violate Isurim. But what is the implication of that Gemara? Halav hachi kol stam mekomos heim becheskas ksherim. But in general, everyone else is totally assumed to be kosher. The Gemara meant to say only Syria, to the exclusion of every other location in the world, is a problem. Syria was known to be problematic, but Tinek, Fairlawn, is not known to be problematic. So you don't have to worry about those places. And therefore, says the Ritva, most Rishonim learn like this, except for the Rambam, which we'll learn shortly. And furthermore, the Gemara specified very limited foods, right? There was cheese and wine and salt. And you know what that means? Says the Ritva, Tidavka bidvarim elu. Only those food items, shenechshutu bahem, shayu regilim likach osam ha'am min ha'goyim. Only those foods on the list in the Gemara are subject to this suspicion. Aval ashar dvarim, shlo hayu regilim kol kach likach otan ha'am min ha'goyim vel mochem mecheskes Yisrael mutarin mikol adam. So says the Ritva, the one place mentioned in the Gemara, Syria, that's the only problem. Additionally, only the foods mentioned in the Gemara are problematic, which would mean if you were to fly to England, hypothetically, and the non-Jewish man in England says, oh, by the way, the cheese in my store is kosher, you're allowed to believe him. Not a problem, because we don't yet have a reason to assume the merchants in England have the same status as the merchants in Syria. And this would be a tremendous heter. And the Ritva says, learn the Gemara this way. You know why? Because the Ravid learns like me, and all the other Rishonim learn like me. Now, who doesn't learn like the Ritva and the Ravid and many other Rishonim? The Rambam. The Rambam says, no. This Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which says that the merchants of Syria are suspicious, that Gemara is telling us a fundamental principle in Kashrus, namely, Bizman Shaisa Eretz Yisrael Kula Yisrael, at the time where all Jews were in Israel running the country, then hayu lokhim hayayin mikol adam Yisrael, you can buy wine and you don't need to ask about the kashrus. You don't need to worry about any kashrus issues. Bein choshishin lo. And in chutz la'aretz, uba chutz la'aretz, lo hayu lokhim. Here's a key line of the Rambam. Elamei adam shehuchzach bekashrus. The only way to purchase a food item outside of Eretz Yisrael is if the person is proven to be particularly honest. Even in Israel nowadays, which is not run by the Beis Din, but it's run by whoever's there, you can only buy food from a person, Elamei Adam, Shehuchzak Bikashrus. V'chein ha-basar ba'agvina v'chatigas dag, she'ein ba'simin k'moshe b'yarnu. Ding, 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 ding. This Rambam takes that same Gemara Meseches Avodah Zarah, which the Ritva limited, and the Rambam says, no. The Gemara says that you have to be suspicious that people are dishonest. And that means unless someone is proven to be what's called kosher, you have to assume the food is not kosher. Holy smokes. That means if you were to go to England, it has the status of Syria. And if someone says the cheese in my store is kosher, says the Rambam, you're not allowed to believe him. Only if he is a notably kosher individual are you allowed to believe him. Now, we don't know what that means exactly to be in the status of having a chezkas kashrus, but this Rambam ends up becoming the reason why we need a hashgacha. You need someone to prove that they are kosher. Whoa. So that's a pretty big difference between the two sides of the coin and the Rishonim, right? Again, the Ritva said, min hastam, status quo, you could assume everyone's okay until they are proven to be sleazy. Once someone becomes suspicious, that's when you have to start being suspicious. But until that moment, you could assume the best. Ram says, no. You have to start by assuming the worst, and they have to prove themselves to be innocent. That's really the question. Are they guilty until proven innocent? That's the Rambam. Or are they innocent until proven guilty? That's the Ritva. And believe it or not, this is a machlokes between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So let's see that inside. I'm going to try to go through some very, very practical scenarios. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Before we go to the practical side of town, we have to answer a very important question raised by the Aruch Shulchan and Achronim as well. We have a principle in halacha known as Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isur. One witness is believed when it comes to matters of Isser and Heter, which is what Kashrus falls under. So if I were to go to a certain store owner, let's assume he's Jewish and has the credentials of an Orthodox Jew, and I say, is the food in your store kosher? And he says, yes. So the Rambam would say, well, does he have a chezkas kashrus or not? And says the Aruch HaShulchan, whoa. We have a principle known as Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurin. Any Jew is assumed to be believed when it comes to Isser V'Heter. So why would we not believe the random store owner? Why is he guilty until proven innocent? We have a principle in halakha that says he should be believed. We don't need two witnesses for Isurin. So this comes to exactly what A.B. said. A.B. says, you know, it's true. Generally speaking, one person is believed when it comes to matters of Isser and Heter, which is what Kashrus is. But when it comes to matters, unfortunately, of, you know, continued business and financial success, this halakhic principle of Eid Nachaman, Eid Nachaman Bisurin goes out the window. So the Aruch HaShulchan in Yoreh Deyasim in Kufya Tesef Dalet says, "Nu, why does the Rambam not believe the average Joe? Don't we have a principle known as Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Isurin? Bikol Machum Chen Vani Kavua. You have a store owner who sells on a consistent basis. Shomer Chayr Tamir B'Chol Yis B'Chol Shah. Shiny. That's different. To whom Moreh Hetera. He's going to justify his dishonesty. He's going to be Moreh. He's going to teach Hetera, a Heter for himself. He's going to come up with loopholes to justify the fact that he's selling treif. Wow. And he brings another halacha, says the Aruch HaShulchan, this is not unique to Kashrus. We know that Beis Din has to appoint judges to go around to the marketplaces to make sure that the scales are not weighted dishonestly. We know that a person who has weights in a store can't have dishonest weights. And there's a Rambam in Hilchos Geneva, Periches, I have it on the sheet here. It says that Beis Din has to go make sure that people are not stealing. And if you go into a store, and by the way, you find that someone has dishonest weights and he's ripping off his customers, the Rambam says that you're allowed to whip the guy. He says, you're allowed to go in there and you're allowed to hit him. So we don't do that anymore. But the point is, when it comes to money, people get, unfortunately, blinded. And they lose to their Yetzer Hara. And the Aruch HaShulchan here has a very, very important line. The sales owners, the people who are making money off of this, takif lehu yitzrayu. They have a very strong Yetzer Hara, demamona, that drive to earn a living. And they're even more suspect, as they are the ones themselves that are not violating an Isser. They're only causing others to violate an Isser, which might mean they're more likely to be dishonest. Holy smokes. So the Aruch HaShulchan just explained why the Rambam is so machmir, because we don't believe individuals when we are competing with their drive to make money. And this is the reality. That is why, by the way, these scandals have happened. You know, if I'm an individual who has a bakery and I want to sell cheese danishes, so if I sell kosher cheese danishes for kosher cheese danishes prices, but I'm really selling you treif cheese, I'm making a lot more money, a lot more money. And if I'm selling you kosher cheese, you know, that's costing me more money and I'm not making as much money. And this literally is what drives store owners. And the OU would tell us stories about this, where they would have a container that is under certification, and they would empty, certain store owners would empty the contents of that container, and they would dump non-kosher contents into the same container to try to pretend that the contents were kosher. Because look, look, the container's kosher. That would happen, you know, again, I hope not too frequently, but this is what you have to look out for. You know, when you audit a mashkiach, or the mashkichim themselves are trying to figure out what they're looking at, they have to make sure that, you know, people are not trying to outsmart them. It's a very intense thing. It's a very intense thing. So this is what we're up against, this Yetzer Hara. So with that Aruch HaShulchan in mind, that explains a little bit of the halachic lumdus about why we don't apply the principle of Eidach and Amen Bisurin. Let's see the Shulchan Aruch bottom line halacha, and we'll try to come away with an equation of how to live life a little bit. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch holds as follows. Ha-chashud le'echol divar ma'asurim. If one is known to be chashud, suspicious, that's when what? Then ein lismok alav, we cannot rely on him. So what did the Shulchan Aruch just say? Did he say innocent until proven guilty, or guilty until proven innocent? The Shulchan Aruch just paskined innocent until proven guilty, because only once someone is in the category of chashud do we have to worry. Only once he's in the category of chashud, i.e., an average person doesn't have to be in that category of chashud. But what? The Shulchan Aruch is in the 1500s. Yeah. So Adam wants to argue that even the Shulchan Aruch would not say the average person nowadays is not chashud. Adam's saying that everyone nowadays is in this category of chashud. So the Shulchan Aruch is not going to get us very far. He's saying everyone's in the category of chashud.
Not true.
Well, AB disagrees with Adam. Why?
There were people in the time of the Shulchan Aruch who were also, they shmatted. So there were people who were not even in the category. Of course there were chashud. Frum person of the time, so the Shulchan Aruch would probably say, a frum person today has a cheskas chashus.
But you're basically both saying the same thing. So what's the status of a frum person nowadays?
If you know he's frum. If you really know he's frum.
Right. So everyone would agree.
That's what the Shulchan Aruch talk is talking about. The average Joe was frum.
Right. So Rabbi Weintraub and Dr. Adam, they're both saying the similar Yisod that it's, all right, we'll get there in a second. But Yashkoch, Dr. Karp, Rabbi Weintraub, but the Ramah comes along and says, whoa, whoa, whoa. The Yesh Omrim, there's another opinion, namely the Rambam, afilu mi she'eno chashud, even if someone is not known to be guilty, rak she'ein makiron oto shu b'cheskas kashus. We just don't know that he's particularly kosher, but we just don't know anything about him. Aser liknos meno yayin oshar devarim, etc. You can't buy from him. So the Ramah then came along and quoted the Rambam lahalacha, i.e., he is guilty until proven innocent. Okay, now what we have yet to do is define these terms of, well, who's considered guilty and who's considered innocent. And I'll tell you an amazing story, which really, speaks to the heart of the whole sugya. It is expensive to get kosher certification. Two stories. There is a certain store in Eretz Yisrael, a very, very popular store that many people buy food in. And they, ironically, do not have a hashgacha. And the NCSY Summer Kollel once wanted to get food from them. And a very fine religious Jew said to NCSY Kollel, listen, you either trust me or you don't trust me. Like, I don't need to prove anything to you. If you want my food, you know, take it or leave it. But I don't have a hashgacha. And, you know, it is what it is. And NCSY Kollel had to make a decision as to whether or not they were going to trust the individual. So would you trust them or not? What would you say? What would you say?
So I would say that NCSY is part of the OU.
Yes.
If they're going to go ahead and do this, what are the people in the OU going to say? And what are we going to say? Like, is the OU necessary in all cases?
Very good.
Or any Ashkenazi.
Very good. So Peter points out that this could lead to a breakdown in the system, which could lead to a lot of issues. Great. Very similar story happened in Bergen County. Bergen County, a store opened up, and they did not go out of their way to get RCBC certification. It was not a restaurant. It was like a store you could buy snacks in. And Rabbi Yosef Adler made an announcement because this store was only going to survive if TABC boys basically went there. The whole premise of the store was to make money off of TABC boys. And Rabbi Adler got up in front of the whole school, Rosh Yeshiva, and said, listen, normally speaking, if someone's not under the RCBC, we don't endorse them, and they need a hashgach, a reliable hashgach, whether it's the OU, the Chafke, the RCBC, whatever. By the way, the Chafke and the RCBC are like the same, they're the same people. Or at least there's tremendous overlap between the two organizations. There's a lot of overlap. So the Rabbi Adler got up and said, listen, this individual is just starting a business. He does not want to get a hashgach. It would be very expensive. So therefore, I'm telling you, he davens in my shul, he keeps Shabbos, and he's kosher. Buy from him. And everyone bought from him. And the same, so it happened to be the majority of things were already packaged with hashgach on it. So it wasn't like a crazy heter Adler was giving out. That being said, there was also an ice cream truck in front of the store. And all the ice cream trucks, they tried to make money off of high school boys. Rabbi Adler said, no, don't you dare buy anything that's not packaged from an ice cream truck, even if they tell you it's kosher, because they want to make money. And these people are not known to be kosher. These are not Jews. These people are not, they're not interested in anything but your money. So if they tell you their milkshakes are kosher, don't listen to them. And you can only buy something that is packaged with extra on it. That's what Rabbi Adler said to TABC. So these are the things that happen all the time. And you go out of town, especially, you want to go to Haagen-Dazs, you want to go to Carvelli. So someone in the community, like a classic child. Who here, you have to raise your hand. Who here knows somebody who goes to Haagen-Dazs, right? Who here has heard that Jews go to Haagen-Dazs, right? It's very normal, right? Because it is known that the ice cream in these places, I think, right? I don't go to these places. Haagen-Dazs, Carvel, all these places that don't have a formal hashgacha are known to be kosher, right? It's a thing. But they don't have a mashkiach. So this is where these issues come up. Like, do you believe them or do you not believe them, right? Yee.
So I'll tell you another story.
Oh, Adam has a story.
No, when I was in medical school in the Bronx, who was a butcher, had no respect, so we didn't want to go there.
Yeah.
Apparently, everyone on Leiding Avenue ate from that butcher because he was a
Now
that was in the 80s.
Right, so Adam has a story over here that a butcher made in the Bronx, made his parnassi even without hashgacha, because everyone knew him. Everyone relied on him. There's a story they say in Lieutenant Birnbaum, Rav Huttner also, that Lieutenant Birnbaum actually started Muzon. And in the beginning, he was having trouble making money because he didn't have a hashgacha. So Rav Huttner told him to tell people that he would trust him. And after Rav Huttner's hashgacha, Lieutenant Birnbaum was able to make a living.
How about Julio's?
Oh, so Julia, same thing. I don't know enough about the Mitzius. I don't want to comment on the particular stores. I don't know enough about what goes on at these places. Ask Rabbi Markowitz, like, knows the deal. I don't know the deal. I'm new. Rabbi Markowitz, he's the guy to ask. And I think he also is not. Yeah, Rabbi Markowitz is like in the know. He's in the know. He knows the deal. So I would recommend asking him. And anyone who asks me these questions, I say, ask Rabbi Markowitz. So as Rabbi, he just knows. He knows better than me on this stuff for sure. So let's look for a second.
Ask one more question.
Yeah, of course, Robert. Yeah, what's up?
So are there cases where there's one major hashgacha, one major organization that has a hashgacha in a certain town, and they kind of like strong arm people that they have to use them, and if they want to use someone else, there's an issue that comes up? Does that come into play?
I can't answer that question. I'll say it like that. I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. I've never seen that per se. Baruch Hashem doesn't happen in our circle. RCBC is the local Ashkacha. That being said, again, there's a tremendous overlap between the RCBC and the Chaf K. The Chaf K certifies Sammy's Bagel and the, the OU certifies the Doghouse. And for a while, we know the Chinese restaurant here was under a certain Hashkacha that was very reliable. I think in our neighborhood, we don't have that issue. I'll say it like that. I don't think that's a problem local to Bergen County. So we'll say just one famous shuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Very important to know that. All right, so a couple of things to conclude with. Very, very, very tricky stuff. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, you know who's considered to be kosher? Remember, let's be machmir for the Ramah. Says the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah are not really arguing. The Ritva and the Ramah are not really arguing. Everyone agrees the same thing, that a frum Jew who like davens is considered kosher enough. The Rambam doesn't mean that like, oh, you need to finish Shas and go to the mikveh every day to be considered to be a kosher individual. He has this lashon here, and the Aruch HaShulchan Kuf Yates Yud Aleph, that the Jew practices Judaism. He puts on a talis and tefillin and davens three times a day. He washes and benches, etc. He teaches his children to, keep halacha. That's considered a Jew who's reliable. I.e., in that case with NCSY Kollel, you would be able to rely on him. And Rabbi Adler, that's where he was coming from, that you can rely on this guy. If you know someone to be a frum Jew, you can rely on him. That's the letter of the law. It's the letter of the law. Now, again, Peter's pointing out, but if we don't have formal conscious industries, we're not going to have formal systems. It could be a breakdown. But the strict letter of the law is that if you believe the guy, you believe the guy. Now, practically speaking, we have vadim and we have organizations that try to keep a organized system. And unfortunately, we've seen many from Jews fall prey to their Yitzhahara for money. So that's why having a kosher organization helps to keep things in check, to have formal standards, to make sure that the manager of the store is not the same person who's the mashkiach of the store. You want to kind of keep the money and the halacha separate. That's like a big policy in industrial kashrus. But in this, if you go to someone's house, you can eat there. When it doesn't come to industrial kashrus, so if the person's a frum Jew, you can eat by them. And now the $1 million question comes up, but what if they're not a frum Jew? And this is when I made one of my biggest rookie mistakes. One of my Talmidim asked me, can I eat by my non-religious relatives? And the Shulchan Aruch holds that we have to draw the line somewhere. Namely, someone who is known to violate the Torah, well, if it's only one sin, you could still assume they keep kosher, except for certain sins that passel them completely. Avodas Kochavim, Chilal Shabbos, or they don't believe in the Torah Shabbat Peh, they don't believe in the hierarchy of halacha. So those people are not believed, i.e. someone who does not observe the laws of Shabbos is not believed when it comes to kashrus. And this person's non-religious relative didn't keep Shabbos. Yeah, there's a famous Gemara Maseches Ketuvos where there was a certain woman who needed to take a shvua in the Beis Din of Rava. And the daughter of Rav Chista, who was also Rav's wife, said, don't let her take a shvua. I know her. She's not believed to take oaths. She's not an honest person. And this is known as, in halach, as kimle begava. Rav's wife, Rav Chista's daughter, was very trustworthy. I.e., and if you know the person, you can rely on the person. And this is what led Rav Moshe Feinstein to say, that if you know for a fact that your non-religious relatives will not want to upset you, and they will keep kosher for your Thanksgiving dinner, or if you go there for Shabbos, you can trust them. If you really, really, really know them very, 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 very well.
Whoa.
Again, Zoom is about to kick me off. But the big heter of Rav Moshe is that you are allowed to eat by a non-religious Jew, even if they violate Shabbos, if you can say with 100% confidence that they are honest with you. That is a pretty important point, though, that you have to really know them very, very well. So, you know, again, Zoom is about to kick me off, but when it comes to industrial kashrus, we have organizations, but by